And you're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we're going to continue on the theme of public spaces that make urban landscapes livable. And we've got Darren Wallace on the phone. He's from Save Lake Knox. G'day. How are you, Darren?
Hi, Annie. How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Tell us, give us an update. We've been following what's going on out at Lake Knox. Could you give us an update about what's going on and the threat to that environmental space?
Yes, thanks. As we've previously talked, there is a move by Development Victoria, who are a state government agency, to bulldoze a lake, which is affectionately known as Lake Knox, in Knoxfield in the eastern suburbs. And they are pushing on with this development, which includes housing and some commercial. We're not, as a group, necessarily opposed to that. What we are opposed to is the destruction of the lake and the associated breeding habitat of endangered bluebill duck species and other wildlife.
The local community, I mean, that lake has become an integral part of people's experience of living in that urban environment, you'd have to say, right?
Yeah, that's right, because it's along an important bike path network along Blind Creek, and generations of people have experienced riding past this. Mind you, it's behind a wire fence, but from a visual and amenity perspective, it's there. It's a pause point for people. People stop with their kids and look at the wildlife on the lake and enjoy the trees that are around it. And you know, over many generations, people have learnt and come to appreciate this naturalised system.
Tell us about the ducks.
The blue-billed duck, yes, an endangered species in Victoria. Only 18 locations where it's been known to breed, and by good fortune and to our great delight, for the last 2 years in succession, they have bred at this location, possibly for longer, but only formally recorded breeding in the last 2 years. This is in the last 2 years when Development Victoria, the state government agency, said that they're unlikely to breed. So they got that wrong. We're delighted that citizen science played a role in confirming the breeding of these species. And it should be said that they've only bred in 17 other wetlands in Victoria previously. Mm. So this is a big deal.
So Lake Knox, is that a person-made lake? Is it an artificial lake?
Yes, originally it is a man-made lake or a person-made lake, as we would say. But over the 50 or 60 years it's been in place, it's naturalised. It's got a range of flora and fauna now that are very hard to replicate. It's, you know, ecologically imbalanced. It has the blue-billed ducks. It has other water birds and waterfowl on it, including also recorded as a vulnerable species of duck called the hardhead. It has tortoises in the water. It has rare aquatic plants growing in the water and some locally rare plants growing around the outside. So, yeah, look, there's no debate that it was person-made, but there is absolutely a debate of whether or not it can ever be replicated. This is the argument of Development Victoria. They say, you know, we're going to bulldoze it, we're going to build you a new wetland as a community and as an environment, and, you know, it's all good, nothing to see, move along. We dispute that vehemently.
Yeah, so it was managed by, what was it, in Environment Victoria?
It's a former DELP site. It's a former horticultural institute. It was used for water harvesting, for watering crops and vegetation when they used to trial those types of things in the past. It's certainly not had any agricultural use for probably a decade and a half, if not longer. So it's just been left to its own devices and the wildlife to do their thing, and clearly they are doing their thing with the breeding of the blue-billed duck.
Yeah, it's quite fantastic, isn't it? It really, what it is it's now being, it's a victim of the planning, you know, policies of future planning and future governments, or, you know, the present government's future plans, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a victim of the desperation by the state government of the day to realise assets, I suppose, inverted commas. We recognise that this space is very, very valuable. This is the broader space. But we absolutely argue that they need to fill in the environmental attribute, which is at the bottom of the site, incidentally, you know, the community is not generally opposed to the development, the housing. There'll be social housing with it. There'll be commercial development. But we are opposed to the destruction of the environmental assets on the site as they stand at the moment. And once open space is gone, it's gone forever. You know, as a society, we don't buy back houses or commercial sites and turn them into open space. When you've got them, you've got to value them.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because somebody was talking to me yesterday about how a mate of his was indignant that he couldn't remove a tree that his father had planted that had now grown into full shape because he wanted to extend his house. And I said to him, but the tree's a living being. It's not a piece of furniture. And I actually said, suck it up.
Well, good on you, and probably I might say the same thing. You know, we hear a lot of this in the people's paradise of the eastern suburbs, where we are out here in Knox, about, you know, it's my tree, I should be allowed to do what I like with it. I take a slightly different approach, and that is that we are custodians of the environment. You know, I appreciate people have title to their property, but I don't think they have title to destruction of the environment and the effect on future generations.
Yeah. Okay, so what stage is the battle at?
Okay, so the development application from the developers, the state government, has yet to go to council. It's impending. Knox City Council are currently unsatisfied with the level of detail in the development application, but it is coming soon. So Knox City Council will need to make a determination about what they think of the development, the bulldozing of the lake, the associated vegetation removal. Who knows where that will go? What I do know is that there's 22,000 people that have signed a petition opposing the destruction of the lake and who support the concept of saving the lake. There is opportunities this year in the lead-up to the state election to affect a little bit of an influence with both the state government, the opposition, and even the minor parties. And I should say the Animal Justice Party and the Greens are people that we're particularly keen to speak with because out here, they played a significant role in determining who's elected to various seats locally, and obviously the Animal Justice Party have concerns about the loss of habitat for endangered species, and I suspect the Greens would too.
Thanks very much for talking to us today. This is a really important issue.
Thanks so much, Annie.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the sand. You could never understand. Feel the fortune flowing. You know it isn't stuck.
Yeah, and take Kim Salmon's advice and ring up during business hours. And people will be happy to take your resubscription or your new subscription. Of course, there's different rates that you can subscribe at. They're $35 for people who are on limited means, people who want a full subscription and are working, $75. There's also business and solidarity prices as well. Which is a little bit more. I think it's $150, and you know this is pretty cheap for a full community voice for a whole year. You know, so it'd be really nice if you got on board. We'd love to have you. Moving right along on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie, we're going to hear from Andrew Dempner. He's the national president of the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union. I caught up with him because he was talking about the role that manufacturing can play. And, of course, leading up to an election, this is serious and important business. They're also talking about the role that Australia could play in electric car manufacturing and what would be required to make this happen. We'll have a little follow-up piece from Senator Tim Ayres. He's a Labor senator. And it was from a piece from the Chifley Foundation when they were doing a session around regional industry and how that could be reinforced, what policy settings would be required to make it possible to have a kickstart regional industry and development. Anyway, they do dovetail together, so we'll hear what they've got to say.
Now, we had announcements early on in COVID with the Prime Minister busily talking up Australian manufacturing and the kickstarting, but that hasn't happened really, has it?
Well, what we found with the Prime Minister's so-called task force was that we entered into that in a spirit of cooperation. You know, the times were, you know, looking fairly grim, and there was a desire to see manufacturing get back on its feet again. We swallowed our pride and didn't try and do anything to, you know, suggest that, well, they'd closed down the vehicle industry and they'd been doing their level best to destroy manufacturing in this country. So we didn't mention any of that. We participated in that process and it was quite good for a while. But it then, after about, I think, four meetings, it became very clear that Neb Power, who'd been appointed by Scott Morrison to undertake the role of chairing this task force, was pretty much just there to make excuses for and to give government plausible deniability, or at least cover, for the fact that what they were seeking to do was simply to give the LNG industry yet another opportunity to develop. And what they did was to simply say that a gas pipeline would solve all of our problems. We said that that was just not sensible, that whilst, you know, we want to see LNG as part of the energy mix as a transition to sustainable and renewable power, the fact is that what they were trying to do is to set up a process which would effectively have benefited about 11 companies in Australia, large companies admittedly, but the fact is that it really was going to do nothing for the vast bulk of manufacturing. And what we found was that this report was done under Neb Power's chairmanship. The actual mainstream manufacturing report was done too. But just to give you a glimpse into the thinking of government and the relative importance that they place on each of them, for the whole of manufacturing, which employs about 900,000 Australians, there was a 30-page report, but for LNG, the answer to our prayers, supposedly, it was a 50-page report. But, you know, the bad news is that neither of them were implemented. And so manufacturing, along with a whole range of other industries, has continued to languish under this government.
Well, your union and others have pointed out that there is actually a huge opportunity for Australia in the electrical vehicle sector. Can you talk to our listeners about this?
You know, when we look, for instance, at the possibility that we have of developing an electric vehicle industry, we have a lot of politicians saying, oh, lithium deposits, oh, rare earth deposits. And of course, the only response that they make is, oh, let's mine it and ship it overseas to be processed. Whereas what we're saying is, if you play your cards right, you can use these lithium deposits to develop our own renewable battery resource, rechargeable battery resource, which, of course, is the key to electric vehicles. And given that electric vehicles are able to be produced here, there's no reason why that couldn't be the basis of a whole new industry. So, you know, we are prepared to work with government, with political parties, with business, and to try and develop and create. a new electric vehicle industry in this country. But what it requires is some timely decisions. You know, I mean, Scott Morrison, he loves to turn a problem into a crisis. This is an opportunity to get in front of the wave and actually determine that there is going to be some positive action taken by the Australian government to set up a world-leading electric vehicle industry in this country, and which would then in turn build on those industries which come with it. And they'd all be renewable. They'd all be able to employ thousands upon thousands of workers. And it's something in which the technologies that we have in Australia, because we are a good adapter of technologies, and we try and make, well, so long as the union has a role to play in it, we try to make those technologies as humanly focused and humanly centred as possible. And if we do that, then we are more than a chance to have a really strong electric vehicle industry. But, you know, time is of the essence. Within the next couple of years, when a lot of other countries, whether it be Korea, Japan, the United States or Germany, when they are producing electric vehicles, what we're saying is that you have got the opportunity here to do this, and you could probably do it in cooperation with various companies that you haven't scared off. We think that there is a great opportunity here for Australia's new manufacturing industries to be able to build up a new and high technology vehicle manufacturing industry, which would be based on the fact that we produce our own batteries.
So what are some of the things that would need to be done, do you think, in order to make this possible?
One thing is that they'd have to be bold. They couldn't just simply sit back and say, oh, it's all a bit too much of a problem. Oh, you know, let's read what Milton Friedman had to say back in the 1970s about government assistance. Oh, you know, let's sort of let the market decide. In fact, that's not the way it works. If we're going to have elaborately transformed manufacturers in this country, government has to take a strong role in ensuring that there's a good investment environment, and they also need to be saying, well, what are the technologies to be used? And if they cooperate and consult with workers and their unions, then there are much greater chance to be able to develop those technologies in ways that are commensurate with empowering workers, but also in developing these technologies to transform manufacturing, and in transforming manufacturing, transforming industry. So they can and should do those things. They are not really high cost issues. You know, the billions of dollars that this government has spent propping up companies through JobKeeper, if we had just a small proportion, or Qantas, or, you know, I mean, the thing is that if they were prepared to spend that level of money lining Gerry Harvey's pockets, then the least they could do is actually say, well, we're going to spend some of that money, or at least a similar amount, in developing an industry which actually has a future. We, believe it or not, we actually have a very, very strong robotics industry in Australia. But pretty much they only work overseas, with the exception of the mining industry. And so places like CSIRO, Flinders University, places like QUT in Queensland, where I'm from, University of Technology in Sydney, they are all doing world-leading stuff in terms of the technologies to be used. And there are companies in Australia, whether they be large multinationals like Siemens or smaller companies like Anker, which makes tools in Melbourne. We actually have the know-how here, but it takes an integrated approach to be able to develop those technologies and develop the people who can use those technologies.
Just to put it into some context for people who are working on the ground, two quite obvious things that could happen, that would happen if something like this was backed, would be long-term strategy for vocational training, which is what young people are calling out for. And one way for this to happen is for the government to ensure that there's local procurement laws.
Oh, local procurement laws have to be a part of the mix. You know, you can't have a situation where the first port of call for a highly paid consultant is to corral all the usual suspects from overseas who can produce things at low cost, and then tell people that that it's for the good of the country that we're going to invest all of our money into overseas produced componentry and goods. You know, I mean, unless we have local procurement laws which provide for at least an even go, because right now the so-called playing field is strongly weighted against Australian goods. Unless we actually have that legislated, what we end up with is situations as we have at the moment, where they say, oh, they can't import to Australia if they are loss leading or dumping or whatever. Well, that's basically just the reverse side of free trade agreements, because what they say in the first place is, oh, we accept all of the favourable measures that might contribute to those industries being able to develop in places like South Korea, where effectively there is significant subsidies or subsidisation of car manufacture. And what we say is, oh, we accept that what they're doing is fair and reasonable. What we need to have instead is a government which doesn't play along with all this comparative advantage garbage and actually pursues good outcomes for Australian industry and good outcomes for Australian for workers here in Australia. I really think that that's a critical part of any mix, and procurement laws have to be revamped to ensure that we no longer think that we have a free trade agreement with this country, and therefore they will, of course, compete fairly with us. You know, the end result of that is things like you currently see with China, with Japan, and elsewhere, where these goods are being landed, and people are going, "Oh, you're actually destroying our industries." It's like you say, "Well, yes, they are." You know, they're capitalists doing the business that you expect capitalists to do, but their government's backing them in. Our government seems to be wanting to be pure. You know, it's.
You mean you'd like them to go into bat for Australian industry?
a government that's went into bat for Australian workers and Australian industries. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. Oh, just before you go, this is really a sore point, because COVID has really shown that local manufacturing is a really important aspect to a nation's survival, really, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's not just because we were so flat-footed in producing the vaccine in the first place, or for the fact that we, at the time when the pandemic commenced, we weren't even making our own surgical gowns or surgical masks here. And you know, I mean, the good news was that there was a company in Shepparton which actually started producing surgical masks and other accoutrements to be able to. So that we would actually have supplies on hand. But bizarrely, only 12 or so months later, the federal government said, "Oh, you know, we can get these masks for 2 cents a piece cheaper in China," and so as a result, all of that hard work to set up and to produce surgical masks suddenly went out the window because the federal government decided that they were going to revert to type and privilege so-called competition from overseas above and beyond Australian industry. You know, I mean, we have a government which makes Alice in Wonderland look like a documentary. It's quite appalling that they think the best of all possible worlds. In the meantime, we pass through the looking glass and we wonder why reality has passed us by, because other countries don't see it in the same sort of rose-coloured glasses. Oh, let's just be a mining country which has got good resources which can be exploited by other countries and which can be developed in other countries so that they can then be sold back to us at an inflated price.
You're with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and that was Andrew Deppner from the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union. And we're just going to get a word from Senator, just a short word from Senator Tim Ayres. He's a Labor senator from New South Wales. And this was a piece from the Chifley Foundation seminar on regional development, effectively, is what they'd call it. And it's got a little slice of information around what has actually happened to that company in Queensland that is producing the technology around lithium batteries for electrical cars.
And I do think there's a role for, you know, regional institutions to get this right. Like, it does make regions stronger. You look at an area like the Hunter, the legacy of all of that cooperation between unions and government and business in the Hunter is still visible in institutions in the Hunter, you know, 20 or so years after the closure of BHP. And it's had long-lasting benefits. You know, some of the engineering and innovation capability that still exists around there is a result of that kind of long-term investment. But it also needs a government that that's getting the economic fundamentals right and driving towards some of these objectives. So just today, the President Biden stood up with the CEO of a Brisbane-based Australian manufacturing firm and has announced that that firm will be essentially relocating to the United States to make electric vehicle batteries. That's 500 or 600 jobs. You've got a government over there that's got the scale and has got the ambition and is making the investment happen. And it's, again, a story about Australian innovation and capability and jobs drifting offshore because the government's just lost the plot with focusing on this, too busy fighting sort of political battles about climate and energy policy rather than getting these sort of fundamentals right. So, you know, like a lot of those things, David, I think it's sort of about getting it, you know, getting both things right. We have lost a lot of that capacity to cooperate across business and trade unions and government and our other big institutions. And without rebuilding some of that, without a bit of sort of working together, then it's going to be hard to make some of these other things, to make real progress.